Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Mickey Addison. He's a consultant, leadership author, and speaker. Mickey, welcome to our podcast.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Now, your title might be the most understated title I've seen in a long time, meaning if you look at Mickey's experience, it's this man served our country, our great country, for 30 years in the U.S. Air Force. And so first, thank you for your service to our great country. I'm curious, what do you feel is the one thread, one lesson that you feel you've learned through your 30 years of being in the U.S. Air Force?
I think the one thread would have to be connecting with people, you know, and probably for people that don't have military experience, that might sound unusual. You know, I wrote an editorial one time that says, if you want to be a good leader, you have to learn to love. And it was in the context of the Air Force, obviously. So it was, you know, love the Air Force, love your country, and love the airmen. And it doesn't mean, you know, that you agree necessarily with what everybody around you thinks or feels or, but it means that, you know, love is about self-service and self-sacrifice. And that's what leadership is. Leadership is primarily an act of service. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that. But I do think the people that I worked with over the 30 years I served in uniform are some of the finest people I will ever know. And I still have relationships with many of them.
Yeah, and it's not a coincidence. I do a lot of nonprofit work. I started this homeless youth program 10 years ago at the largest shelter in LA. And it wasn't a coincidence that we had a lot of veteran volunteers and their level of service, depth, and commitment. I remember one guy, his name is Darren, super nice guy. He's a former Marine for 4 years. But I'm going to share the story because, again, it just illuminates how powerful people in the service are, where he literally came to the shelter on Halloween. The kids saw that he had his Army fatigues or his Marine fatigues. And at first it was just more for their Halloween costume because they want to be cool like him. And when they wore his fatigue, is it called fatigues or what? Like the
Marines call them utilities, actually.
So, okay. Yeah. So they were wearing his utilities and they looked so happy that even though he gave it to them more just to lend it to them for Halloween, they got so happy that he literally gave it to them for a gift. But it's such a powerful story where whether you served in the Air Force or he served in the Marine, just again, thank you for being this great leader and example, because without people like yourself, we wouldn't have as great of a country we do. So first, again, thank you for that.
Well, thanks.
And in terms of your book, let's talk about that. Leading Leaders, great book title. Let's talk about why you chose to write that book.
Well, you know, I wrote that book in 2013 at the conclusion of what I thought was going to be my last command. I got one more after that. I was privileged to command 5 times in our Air Force. And so, you know, I had used the same leadership philosophy over my previous 3 commands. And I thought, you know, this is something I want to be able to teach other people. One of the things when you get, especially when you get to the end of your career, and I was close to it, I was within 4 years. You know, when you get to the end of your career, you're thinking, okay, well, what am I going to leave behind? What can I offer? Am I just going to exit, you know, and hang up the uniform and never look back? And I thought, you know, I've been living in this leadership lab for, at that time, I'm 26 years, ended up being 30 years total, living in this leadership lab. And how do I pass this knowledge that I've gotten? Is it just going to leave with me or can I pass it along? So that's where Leading Leaders came from. It came from every time I took command or became the leader of a unit, this was my commander's speech. This was, okay, this is what I believe as a commander. This is how I expect us to conduct ourselves as airmen. And this is what I think being a leader is all about. And so that's where it came from. That's why I wrote it.
And let's talk about when you say command, what do you mean? How many people did you command? Just paint the picture so our listeners understand how you led or who you led.
Sure. So I was an engineer officer. So all but two of my units. So I commanded 5 times. And a commander, you have special authority over the people that you lead. It's more than just being a boss. I mean, obviously you're the boss of the unit, but you're also personally responsible for their lives in many cases. And not every job obviously was a combat job, but as an engineer officer, we worked around high voltage equipment and heavy equipment. And so I was responsible daily for their safety, as well as getting the mission done, as well as for mentoring, coaching, and developing the next generation of airmen that would follow me. So command is a very special trust. And I was privileged, as I said, to do it five times. And so the units I commanded as a captain, a major, a lieutenant colonel, and then twice as a colonel. And they varied in size from 85 people as a captain to 2,600 people when I was the mission support group commander at the Air Force Academy. So pretty big, pretty diverse group. The last two were multidisciplinary because we were in charge of the whole base or bases in the case of my last job. So, so when you're leading a group like that, and they vary in age, and it's not just people, it's not just airmen in uniform, there's civilians as well. So they vary in age from, very young airmen fresh out of basic training to more seasoned airmen in uniform who may have been around for a little while to civilians. We had a lot of civil service employees, everything from people working in office jobs to out in the field. We had contractors that supported us. So pretty diverse team from all walks of life and all ages. And as a commander, you're the commander of all of them. And so you have to find a way to connect with them across generational lines, across culture lines. That's one of the things. And I know, we're involved in a great national conversation about race now, and it's good that we're doing that. And I think that's one of the things that when we look to the example of our military services, we still have a long way to go as a country. And I'm certainly not minimizing the troubles that we're going through, but I think when we look at that and we see how the military was the first to integrate, for example, among the first to integrate way back in the Eisenhower administration, and the strides that our military is making now to put the dignity of the human person first. And that all strives, I think that all comes from that point where we are responsible to each other and for each other, sometimes for our lives.
Yeah, that's very profound. And the whole topic of race, I mean, for me, I was born and raised in New York City, so I'm obviously not, I'm of Asian descent, I'm not white or black. And so I always tell my white friends who might not have experienced racism, look, you might not have experienced it, but it is there. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. even if you haven't experienced it, it's just like us as men, is there sexism? I think there might be. Even though I'm not a woman, I can at least accept that it's there. So it's just mm-hmm. at least having a basic understanding that you might not have to, you don't have to experience a rainstorm to know that it rains. I mean, there's certain things that human nature, whether you're in the US or Japan or China or Europe, everyone has these unfortunate challenges of race or religion or gender. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost human nature where even if you take away races, before there were so-called minority problems, they didn't like the Irish. They're white. They didn't like the Italians. They're white. They didn't like the Jews. They're all white.
Right.
But unfortunately we have these issues, but that's why we have people like you, Mickey.
Well, so, I certainly try. I mean, I'm just as human as everybody else, but I do certainly try. And it, I think it's something. It's, in our country, we don't always live up to our ideals, but we should be aspiring to do that. And it's my optimistic hope that many, many Americans are aspiring to live up to our ideals. I hope so.
Yeah. And again, what you said and how you shared it about talking about love, just that alone, if we're starting mm-hmm. with that basis and that foundation, then at least we can have a conversation. So what's one lesson from your book, Mickey, that you can share with us that you feel might be just most relevant right now, given what we're doing? I mean, of course you have a lot of lessons, but what do you think is one lesson that is most relevant right now during what we're going through?
When we talk about, in the very first part of the book, I talk about integrity, and the reason it's the first chapter, the first section of the book, is because integrity has to be foundational. And there's lots of ways to talk about integrity, but I think the most important key concept about integrity is what I call an internal compass, but an external orientation. And it kind of goes back to the conversation that you and I were just having a couple of minutes ago. And that is we as human beings can talk ourselves into anything. We can justify anything. To quote the incredible Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon's movie from the, I think it was the 90s, nobody thinks they're a bad person. And right. So you can talk yourself into anything. So if you don't have a compass that is pointed to true north, and that means ethics, values, first principles that you would then apply. I mean, the world is very gray. You have to make moral choices. But if you're doing that with an internal orientation about what it means to me or how I feel about something or whether I can justify something, your internal compass is just going to spin. But if you have a set of ethics or religious beliefs or moral beliefs, core values, then that's going to help you apply those same first principles, as Thomas Aquinas would call them, in every single situation. And I think it's, you know, for leaders, we have a variety of those. We have professional ethics in our profession, whether we're doctors, lawyers, engineers, pretty much every profession or trade has a set of ethics. Companies have values and ethics. And, very often we see corporate executives and government officials and, you know, church officials or, you know, pick your organization will get into trouble when they are acting contrary to the organization's beliefs or their personal beliefs. And they try to keep it hidden. And so, you know, none of those things are going to stay hidden for long. I mean, especially in the 21st century with cameras in our pockets, nothing is going to stay hidden for long. Yeah. People are going to see it.
No, that's such a great way to end our podcast in terms of having integrity. Again, going back to the ideals, it's so important that we all accept and admit that we're humans, but if we have those ideals, it allows us to have that guide in life. So Mickey, thank you so much for being our guide today. How can our guests stay in touch with you and read your book?
Oh, great. Well, thanks for asking. So the easiest way is just to go to my website, mickeyaddison.com, mickeyaddison.com. And they can sign up for my newsletter, which I put out a weekly, and they'll get a free copy of my ebook, Mickey's Rules for Leaders, when they do that.
Awesome. Mickey, thanks again. Have a great day.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.